Greetings, time travelers, and welcome to another installment of the Who's On Podcast. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on www.whosonpodcast.com if you haven't already. With Dan, who is on Skype in Pennsylvania, and Rob to my right in the lovely state of New Jersey. Mm. This is an American Doctor Who podcast for all our newcomers, Whovians and Nuvians alike, across the globe. What we think matters. Robot of Sherwood. Or Robot of Sherwood. Sorry, I did the Twilight Zone 60s thing. Written by Mark Gatiss. What else did he write, Dan?
He's basically written every season. His first story was The Unquiet Dead, the one, the Victorian setting with Charles Dickens. So they're another literary figure, though one that existed, arguably, I guess. I guess some people think that Robin Hood was kind of like a King Arthur thing, where he's like amalgamation of like different actual existing people. But that's something else. And he did, I believe, Asylum of the Daleks more recently. Now I'm looking it up.
Okay. Yeah, I know. He's also a very accomplished actor. He was in the Martha Jones episode where he was going to change what it means to be human. Remember that? And he turned into that bug monster thing, which is very Doctor Who. And he wrote Web of Caves and acted as the Doctor in Web of Caves, which is a hilarious little short. So have the boys and girls watch that, and they'll enjoy saying, Doctor!
Yes. Yes.
During this episode, it was a romp. It was a smile fest. It was lots of laughing, and laughing that couldn't be stopped, even when the Doctor tried to stop it. What did you think of the episode, Rob?
Upon initial watching, I was a little bit just, eh. I was like, whatever. This is kind of one of those intermediary episodes, but I guess that's kind of what the point of it was. It wasn't there necessarily supposed to help propel the arc of the season. It's just, like you said, it was an episode to have fun with, to just kind of sit back and enjoy. You know, because, you know, everybody loves the story of Robin Hood. Who doesn't? Other than maybe some rich people that don't want their money taken. But, you know. So, really, I mean, it's just, when I think back on it, I've only seen it the one time yet, so. But I think if I went back and watched it again, I would definitely just enjoy it more. Just as a fun time of, you know, the idea of running into the real life Robin Hood and finding out that he was real and the Doctor being put in his place about, you know, sometimes what you think isn't necessarily accurate.
I thought it was such a breather after the first two episodes. The first one, in my opinion, being very good, and the second one being kind of a letdown. This one, because it's Mark Gatiss who wrote it, and I just love whatever he does, he's sort of like Neil Gaiman to me in that regard, especially when it comes to Doctor Who, because he's always been a fan. He enjoys it so much, and he treats it with the respect and dignity, and knows what he can get away with and what he should stay away from. So I really enjoyed this episode. The banter was hilarious, I thought. And what about you, Dan?
I'm in the same boat as you. I really approached it just from the clips and the teaser. That it was like, this looks like it's going to be a comedic episode. So I came in expecting an enjoyable romp, and I got something. It was, you know, very Princess Bride-esque, I felt. Just the fact that Robin Hood was exactly the way that Clara imagined him, you know. And the whole ridiculousness of it, that the Doctor being completely unable to accept that he was wrong, and just all that stuff with him trying to prove that they weren't real. I love the mention of the miniscope, which goes back to Carnival of Monsters. And just, I love the grumpy Doctor.
And the theme park from the future was mentioned too. It's a little bit of the chase when he thought that he was actually inside the darkest recesses of the human mind, and it turned out to be a theme park. With Dracula and Frankenstein, and then Nightmare in Silver too, the theme park, you know, reference for the future. So I thought that was neat. Won't bother with a brief synopsis. Actually, the plot is just funny, you know, for the most part, it's just getting from point A to point B and everywhere in between, where the Doctor is, like Dan said, trying to disprove Robin Hood, and right. Robin Hood laughing at him the whole time. And
yeah, I mean, really, the story was comprised of really like 10 minutes worth of anything outside of the Robin Hood story. I mean, you know.
Yeah. So what? Yeah. Okay. Let's just go there since we're
sure.
Here. The brief synopsis basically would be like this is like.
Basically, yeah, exactly. The Doctor and Clara land in, what, 15th century England or whatever?
1190.
1190, that's right. So, yeah, what's 12th, whatever. But, yeah, they land there because Clara said she wants to see Robin Hood, and the Doctor is convinced that Robin Hood doesn't exist. So they land there and run into Robin and Friar Tuck and Little John, you know, when they're at their little cave hideout. And basically the story is just, it's the normal Robin Hood story, but with the Doctor trying, you know, plucking a piece of hair from Will Scarlet, and you know, some other things like that, and the story really picks up once they go to the archery match, which everybody knows is a whole Robin Hood splits the other archer's arrow in two. Right. You know, the different stories change who the other archer was, and then the Doctor decides, you know what, I'm going to prove you all wrong. I'm going to come in and blow up the target, because for some reason the Doctor has to be better than everybody with whatever he's doing. So, and then basically the guards of the area working for
the sheriff
turn out to be robots from outer space, and they capture the Doctor and Clara. And
well, the Doctor intentionally blows up the target so that they
well
could be
yeah
captured.
so that they capture them. Yeah, he's
the
trying
quickest
to,
way
it was
to learn
bait.
Anyone's plans.
Yeah, exactly, get captured. So
I have to break in and mention the karate chop.
Yes.
And which is totally John Pertwee.
Yeah,
and I loved
yeah,
it.
That was good.
Especially with the velvet coat underneath.
Yes, yeah. yes. And just as far as the synopsis, we'll get into talking about some of the other details of it, because there was the whole scene with them being chained down together was just perfect. But so basically they find out, you know, the spaceship crashed. The Doctor's trying to interrogate. And investigate, not interrogate. He's not interrogating anybody. And the Sherwood was kind of brought back to life by the robots. I don't know. They didn't explain why they chose him, right? I guess it's just that he got hit by it. So,
yeah. So, in the deleted scene, he got hit by it, and they reconstructed him, so he's like half man and half robot, right? Is that right, Dan?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, which they allude to in what was aired, I guess. There's the line that's in there about being half android.
Yeah, when they're up on the above the gold.
Yep. And basically, a fight to the death between Robin Hood and the Sheriff of Rottingham, which they referred to as something different in this, didn't they? It wasn't Rottingham, it was
Nottingham.
Oh, did they call it? Oh,
you're thinking of Men in Tights.
I'm like, yep. Shows you where I'm at. But and so
Latrine wasn't in this one.
Yeah, I know. I got to remember that.
It's a lot better than the
good
name.
Good change. So back to Doctor Who. Yeah, the typical fight to the death, and Robin wins, obviously, and at the same time, the Doctor wins because he's able to save the day and solve the situations the way that he feels is most appropriate.
Okay, question, Dan. Now the beginning of the episode, the Doctor issues Clara the opportunity to go wherever she wanted to go.
Space and time.
Where would Dan want to go?
Where would I? Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's a tough one. Yeah, that really is. I mean, definitely wouldn't want to go anywhere bad. Because, I mean, I'm fascinated by the Middle Ages, but I never actually want to go there because,
that little
really,
that plague
unless
they had or
unless
whatever.
Unless I was royalty, you know, then it wouldn't be so bad. Yeah, maybe that. You know, I'll go back to the Middle Ages and kind of see how royalty was. You know, I don't want to see the peasant side. Or, I don't know. Well, that really put me on the spot. I was not prepared for that.
Sorry.
And I should have been, because that's exactly the kind of question that you would ask for this.
Yeah.
Come back to me.
Okay. Rob, same question. I would want one second. I do want everyone else who's within hearing distance of this voice to put in the comments in Facebook or email us too. Where would you go? Because Clara obviously wanted to go meet Robin Hood. That was her little dream.
That was her choice. That was what she wanted to do. Yeah.
And where would you go, Rob?
as you're, I'm sitting here listening to Dan being indecisive, and I'm like, I have no idea what I'm going to say. I don't know. I mean, I probably as not that great of a time as it probably was for it. I'd probably say somewhere around like the, well, I just got off of reading a James Michener book, so this is probably influencing it. But I'd probably be around, you know, like the whole like Palestine-Israel area in like the aughts, as in like, you know, back in like the beginning of the Gregorian calendar. You know, somewhere, just all of what was happening at that time in that area.
Gregorian, so what as century are we talking about?
First.
In your mind.
Oh. First.
Okay.
Very, very early. You know, like, yeah. Yeah, I should have said, not instead of the aughts, I'm not talking about like 2000. I'm talking about like, yeah, like the year 012, you know, like by our calendar.
Wow.
As turbulent as a time as it is down there, it was not exactly a friendly place to be, you know, but just the
whole
idea. Yeah,
they stay away from that time zone in Doctor Who.
Yeah, they kind of do. Yeah,
out of necessity, I think.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
But I would have the same kind of questions. You know, I would love to see the Big Bang, you know, and they have gone there.
Yeah, they've gone there. And well, gone to the second one. They haven't really gone to the first one.
Destruction, they went to. Oh, well, that was the birth of a new star. So, yeah, I don't know. But I would love to see the, I don't know. Maybe listen to a lecture by Tolkien or C.S. Lewis.
Something like that would be cool.
Just in Oxford in the 30s, 40s, 50s, somewhere in that time. That'd be neat.
There's a lot of good thinkers around then. So, yeah, I can imagine pretty much actually any English university in that time to be able to hear lectures from a lot of the people that were there at the time.
I think for me, just thinking about what Clara had a hero. Robin Hood was a hero to her. So that made it easier because I thought to myself, who do I view as a heroic person from history? And for me, it'd be Benjamin Franklin.
Hmm.
So maybe the night that he was flying the kite, you know, or electricity hit the wire. And I mean, the man was amazing. He invented so many things. I mean, it's really hard to pinpoint.
And the best diplomat ever.
Yeah, but I think that's the one that people think of the most.
Probably.
Yeah, I'd like to meet some historical. Daniel Boone is one that sticks out in my mind.
Tesla. I mean, how many people skip talking about Tesla? I mean, you know.
Yeah, he's very in right now.
Yeah, he kind of is. I don't know if he is as much or just the fact that his name is being used on a car, but, you know.
No, it's all valid. It's there's a whole new generation that are coming up with all this Tesla what if kind of things.
Well, because they're proving a lot of his theories.
Right.
They're, you know, the ideas he had, you know, the whole wireless electricity and everything like that, and it's becoming reality. So he, you know.
And titanium cars, is that what that is, too? Motorless?
Oh, well, yeah, the zero-friction electric cars and stuff like that.
It's
neat.
Mm-hmm. But I like Dan's idea, too. I would like maybe meet Mary Shelley.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I guess it would be meeting somebody and having dinner with them. You know, as simple as something like that.
Yeah.
That would
picture like Frank Herbert, like the eve after the release of Dune, and you just found out how many copies sold the first day, you know, to just sit down and say, so how does this make you feel? From my perspective, knowing where it goes from there, too, though, you know. But.
There's a character in The Sandman, Dan, who Morpheus sees every century they meet once. And I don't remember his name, and that's very bad. It's been a while since I read the Sandman stuff. And I would
Hob Gadling.
Hob Gadling. I would like that kind of thing with if someone else had that longevity.
Hmm.
You know, I think that would be neat to steal a Gaiman idea. Who does write for Doctor Who?
Yeah.
You know, to steal that for the Doctor, you know, maybe meet someone every century, and taking it from a Sylvester McCoy kind of position where they would sit and play chess, which would be neat. Anyway, moving on. Robin Hood, real or fake? You were talking about it before, and I did do a little bit of research on it. There's some stuff on the History Channel, which is really the anti-History Channel for a lot of stuff, I guess. But... Yeah. In 1225, there was a character called Robert Hode. He was the outlaw Robert Hode. From 1226 to 1230, there was characters into the Green Wood that he went, apparently. 1261, Robert LeFlever is a Robin Hood. He was a.k.a. Robin Hood in the court documents. And then there is in 1377 a Scottish document called the Scotachronicon, where there's stories and ballads, approximately 8 different outlaws called Robin Hood in the 13th century. So it does seem to be sort of an amalgamation of characters who took on a moniker, sort of like serial, kind of like we're going to steal from the rich and give to the poor kind of people. I guess that was the feudal arrangement at the time, where the taxes were just so high that...
You could kind of imagine it almost being like a Dread Pirate. No, actually, it's funny to bring up Princess Bride again, but it's almost like a Dread Pirate Roberts thing, or you know, even some other things. There are other times where, you know, like a group may be using a group identity, and you know, the media will kind of twist it and turn it into a specific person. I mean, they actually did it recently with the 4chan message boards. Somehow, the media started taking, instead of 4chan being a message board, they turned it into the hacker called 4chan. So
Kim.com.
But you could almost imagine that kind of thing to it too, though. Like you said, if Robin Hood was almost like a gang name, you know, guys, you know, robbing from the rich and bringing them back to their own neighborhood, you know.
Right.
Group of guys you could stand behind.
Okay, so sword fight with a spoon. Dan, what do you think?
I thought it was great. I thought it was exactly the kind of thing that the doctor would use. Very Tom Baker.
Yeah. And John Pertwee.
Yeah. I can picture John Pertwee using a spoon also. I know I read on the, you know, on certain forums, there were a few people that thought that it was stupid.
Yeah, I can see that.
But I mean, I didn't, because I was already so caught up in the sense of fun of the episode. I was sort of completely into it. I was like, yeah, spoon, yeah, you know, because Doctor is kind of nonviolent, you know. Well, nonviolent in a violent kind of way.
Yeah. Well, I think
passive aggressive.
Yeah. Well, I could picture, you know, the kind of thing where, like, maybe they're even shooting the episode and, you know, Robin had an extra sword and then somebody came along and said, no, he can't do this. This is the Doctor. You know, so, well, what do we have? Well, we got a big spoon. Oh, here you go. We'll use that.
Yeah, Sylvester McCoy played spoons.
Yeah.
I thought that was a reference to Sylvester McCoy. Although it looked like he was eating ice cream.
Yeah,
earlier he was, yeah.
Yeah, it was neat. And the mention of who he studied with, what was it, D'Artagnan and... I don't remember. Somebody else. It was very Mask of Mandragora to me with Tom Baker, because he was a very good sword fighter in that, and he used his scarf, kind of like threw it up to the side, and he was ready. And you know, everyone thinks of Tom Baker as sort of big and klutzy, but at the same time, he really had physical prowess.
No, he had. Yeah, exactly. He definitely had his skills. I think Tom Baker liked to play it down, though. I think he was the doctor that would reserve it for the times where he really needed to express it. But other than that, he wanted to just be the scientist having adventures.
Oh, I got it here. It was Richard the Lionheart and Cyrano de Bergerac.
Right.
And he mentioned Errol Flynn.
Yeah.
The actor apparently was very good at sword fighting. And he probably was. I mean, those sword scenes are legendary.
Yeah.
Bob Anderson, who recently passed away as a sword master, that worked with Errol Flynn. And he went on to do, like, Star Wars and Lord of the Rings and Princess Bride. He did all the sword fight choreography for that. So
it also made me think of The Court Jester with Danny Kaye. And You'll Never Outfox the Fox was one of the lines, I think, in there. Which is a nod to the Black Fox, and the Black Fox represented Robin Hood in the Court Jester. So that was fun, because it's Danny Kaye's one of my favorite.
Yeah.
So the whole time we have this dynamic of Robin Hood versus the Doctor, versus Peter Capaldi's Doctor.
Yes.
And while I'm watching, I'm thinking Matt Smith and him would get along so well, but because it's Capaldi...
There's
this whole dichotomy going on, which is completely different than what a previous doctor would have. And I love the fact that Mark Gatiss wrote this hilarious little thing, and the doctor is constantly trying to put a damper on it and smother. So he says at one point, stop laughing. Why are you all doing that? Are you simple or something?
Yeah.
So, and then, of course...
well, it's like the whole scene, like, you know, when they were locked up in the dungeon. You know, like you said, Robin and Matt Smith, if they had been the ones in there, they would have been laughing together. It wouldn't have been the whole, you know, well, now we see who's really in charge and then taking Clara away. It would have been more like they were all friends hanging out instead.
Yeah, the doctor's like, oh, I'd live longer, you know, wouldn't I, Clara?
It's not a competition. It's like, you know, no, it's not a competition, but it would be me, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Exactly. There was a neat thing that he said, too. When did you stop believing in everything? And he asks, when did you start believing? And she replies, don't you know? You know, as saying, like, you're this impossible hero that no one would believe in. And so she was tying it back to the way he thought about Robin Hood, which I thought was neat. And in this episode, I loved Clara.
Mm.
I know, like, earth-shattering. Yeah. Yeah. I thought Clara did a really good job. And you know why? Because the key ingredient for a companion to do well, my wife actually was the one who, so I won't take credit for it. She said when the companions are separated from the doctor, that's the reason why you like certain people. Martha Jones being one, Ian and Barbara being another. When they're separated from the doctor, they rise and fall on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And they have growth. They have character development, where that doesn't exist when the stupid companion is just asking questions and looking pretty.
Hmm.
Doctor, I don't understand.
Well, I liked Perry because Perry challenged Colin Baker, and he needed that.
True.
And yeah, I knew you would see. He was doing a Perry impersonation. Do your Perry impersonation, Dan.
Doctor.
Oh, doctor.
This is my fake American accent, doctor.
That I can't even stick in for the course of one whole episode.
Poor Nicola Bryant.
No, she's a great actress. We're not knocking her. Her
natural Anglo-Saxon is so nice.
She's one companion who looks better now than I think she did then.
She's aged very well. Yeah. She's gorgeous still.
So I thought of the King's Demons in this episode, the Peter Davison episode. Sheriff. What were your thoughts, Rob, on the sheriff?
Oh, well, when he first showed up, when they beat up the monk guy, stabbed him, more specifically, I said, not only does this guy look and act just like Anthony Anley,
who's Anthony Anley for the Nuvians?
The second person to portray the master.
Right.
Roger Delgado was the first.
Well, potentially third, but second is in canon.
Yeah, yeah. But Anthony Anley, I think, is probably the guy that most fans of classic probably think of when they think of the Master. I don't know if he had the longest run as the Master, or if he just had more episodes, or it's just because of the time frame that he did. I'm not sure.
He probably did have the longest run.
I would imagine. But when I first saw the... what was his name again, Dan? Bruce something?
Bruce... Ben Miller.
Ben Miller, that's right.
Ben Miller.
The actor who played...
Yeah, the sheriff in this. But when I first saw him and the way the conversation he was having with the, I guess it was Marion's father.
Right.
And just the way that he just takes care of him at the end of the episode, I was just like, this guy needs to be the master. I was like, I was ready to put everything down on that. Just with the look that he had with the goatee and the hair and just the way he carried himself and just talked with people, I was ready to throw down everything I had on me say this guy's going to be the doctor.
I recognized him right away as being in that silly little Rowan Atkinson spoof of James Bond. What was the name of that? Oh, I'm bad. But he was the other agent that Rowan Atkinson played with.
All right.
In that movie. And it also was he looks just like the guy who played the sheriff in The Awakening, another Peter Davison episode, when they're reenacting this battle and leading up to this battle that happened in this historical town.
Right.
Are you looking for that?
Yeah, he's looking for the title of that.
Johnny English.
Johnny English.
Oh, okay.
It. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He doesn't have a beard in it.
Right.
It's no beard.
Yeah.
He's very clean cut. Of course, the arrow contest happens, so I mean we mentioned that, and he blows up the whole thing. The sheriff, he shouts incorrectly. I have that down in my stack of stuff. I don't know why I did it. Maybe somebody online can tell me why I said the sheriff shouts incorrectly.
You sure you're not just thinking of now you're taking it back to Men in Tights?
Maybe, I don't know. I'm not sure. But anyway, the Doctor asks for enlightenment, which I thought was another throwback for Mark Gatiss.
Mm-hmm.
From another episode from Peter Davison. It's
yep.
And Gatiss had that little funny spoof. Well, it, I don't know, kind of like very dark, funny spoof with Peter Davison where he steals him at one point.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then the androids start. And of course, you think of androids, Atara, because they have these visors that open up and they actually look like the androids from Robots of Death. And so it's Mark Gatiss who's writing it. So there's all these references to classic Doctor Who,
mm-hmm.
where if you just had never seen it, you would think, hey, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. But you can see exactly where he's coming
right.
from.
Pieces things together.
The model that he's using. And it's just like Robots of Death. That's exactly what they look like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Except they have these little crosses at their foreheads.
Yeah. Yeah. The brows kind of, yep.
Where they
projected
have these
or whatever.
Pink lasers.
Now, the only thing that my wife is actually one that made the comment, I didn't think about it, but it's one of the few episodes that we could think of where they don't explain all the details about the villain. Like, you know, did they ever give us a name for what specific planet those robots are from or whatever? But it's just strange that they never gave us the, you know, the name of the home planet. They never gave a name for, you know, it was never the... We are the blah, blah, blah from blah, 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 and we are here because of blah, blah, blah. Like, we never got that in this one.
I think that's going to be our new little audio beginning. We'll start every podcast with that.
We are. Well, because anytime we meet a new villain,
yeah.
we always have that, you know, especially in the classic episodes. So that's why it was kind of weird to me that, you know, with all the references to the classic episodes, we never got that. But my wife picked up on it. But at the same time, I guess.
But he did give a century. He said the 29th century, if I remember. Yeah, 29th century spaceship.
Hmm.
Like Half-Face Man, but more sophisticated, the Doctor said. And the Doctor, when he walked into that room, he said, finally, something real.
Yeah.
Not all this baloney that he thought was...
Because
like,
he thought everything else was the projection.
A
like
scam.
When he started talking about it. Yeah.
Everybody was just playing their parts for the robot, the whole scene,
mm-hmm.
to get this gold. So I didn't know that radiation causes heat and growth in the green. That's a...
I thought radiation wiped things out and turned them gray.
Yeah, that was a little weird.
I mean, you know, we have Chernobyl to
look
at,
but
maybe that's
so.
Just, you know.
That was strange that, oh, the vegetation because of radiation, some kind of radiation, and the people wouldn't be sick? Again, with the radiation and the selective...
Well, I mean, a small amount of radiation is actually good for you.
It is?
Plus, it depends on... I think it depends
Small amounts, yeah, it's weird.
Well, you think of like targeted radiation and chemo.
Exposed to thermite radiation constantly, like very low levels. You know, it's actually like, I don't know. But you know, lethal levels is bad. It's one of those things. Not that you should go, you know, and like stand in front of, you know, an open microwave door or something like that.
I'm going to test this out, Dan.
Yeah, you know, don't try this at home, kids. But yeah, I saw a documentary once. I can't reference it because I can't remember. But I just remember radiation being used as a cancer treatment.
Well, that's what I was going to say, like chemotherapy and stuff. Yeah. You know, that's radiation, so very
that's
targeted.
Some pinpoint.
It'll actually kill the cancer cells.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a whole other debate. Because I've actually read, too, that after it does that, it actually opens up
it can
the
actually
cells
create
for
them
more
to
potential
come back.
To
yeah.
get cancer again,
mm-hmm.
you know, too. So it's a double-edged sword.
But at the same time, they also use radiation for... like dating old materials to fossils and stuff. There are some ways that they do,
laser
you know, the carbon dating and stuff. Yeah.
yeah.
And I think it depends, I guess, on what form. I mean,
if,
not that there's really that many forms of radiation necessarily, but different wavelengths and stuff will affect
things
differently.
If carbon is constant throughout time.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know. The idea of radiation causing basically a paradise is sort of, I don't know, that kind of, I guess I missed that line.
No,
that must have been a throwaway line.
Yeah, not to get stuck on it. I was just an observation. I like that Robin Hood, the whole banter in the jail cell with the desiccated man crone. That was my favorite little takeaway from that, calling
yeah.
Peter Capaldi a desiccated man crone. And
oh, I think he soiled himself.
Yeah.
yeah, that was that whole thing there with getting out was.
He said that he's just too pale. It's the way with Scots, they're strangers to vegetables, which made me laugh.
That's a good one.
And then the best part was when, you know, the keys went down the hole, and they said, well, the best part is that
Clara, at least Clara's not here. Yeah. That was one of those things when I like, with Mr. Bean, like a lot of Rowan Atkinson, I cannot watch because I'm one of those, I cannot take people doing stupid things. Like, yeah. you know, like Dumb and Dumber. Oh, I sneezed on the Mona Lisa. Well, let me just go and get a paper towel, wet it, and wipe my snot off. Like, yeah, that's not going to ruin the painting. But the same kind of thing happened with this when they're sitting there fighting over, I've got it. No, I've got it. I was like, stop. And then, yeah, it just went down the drain. And yeah, I was just bad.
And so the doctor and the Robin Hood gets a real kick out of the doctor. Ornamental plant stands come in.
Mm-hmm.
Which is cute. The plates deflecting the beams, I don't know, was kind of funny to me.
I mean, mirrors being used to, you know, similar things have been done.
Yeah.
So that didn't really bother me.
But at the same time, was it because it was gold? Was it, since that was already like the precious metal that it was for their engines and stuff, was it just that their particular...
It was just on hand.
It was just a silly plot gimmick, I guess.
And it made me think of the Fires of Pompeii episode with the circuitry and stuff all together. Because as soon as I saw the gold, I said, they're building circuits. And
yeah,
then,
me
and then
too.
You see, and
yeah, then
you
they see had the mold and everything.
Yeah, which was interesting. My favorite part of the entire thing, though, was when Marion kissed the doctor on the cheek. And he just touched his face. And it was very William Hartnell. It was, you can see where he's going to mellow over time with these small little gestures that these humans, these little humans with little brains, do to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he just touched his hand to his cheek and like closed his eyes just a little.
Mm-hmm.
It was very sweet, I thought.
I think some of those things feed into the epicness of the story, too, sometimes, as in, like, all of Doctor Who. Because, you know, you think, you know, we know that he had a granddaughter, at least who he called a granddaughter. He's talked about his family. And, you know, how many people really get sentimental with him? Like, you know, how many people really show affection to him physically? So every once in a while, when somebody gives him a genuine, not silly, oh, I'm in love with you, Doctor, kind of affection, you know, just a genuine, like, you're my friend and I thank you for being a good person. You know, which we heard him ask previously, you know, am I a good person? So maybe,
And we had that play with David Tennant as this is somebody who does things for all these people and yet never gets thanked. And he's up there in the balloon during the one episode with the Cybermen, and everyone down below is thanking him. And he doesn't know how to react to it.
Yeah.
And so I think that was really sweet.
Mm-hmm.
One moment at the end... And it just popped in my head, so I need to say it now. I thought it was a great Doctor moment. And not something I noticed initially, but when I watched it the second time I did. When the spaceship takes off at the end, and he shoots the golden arrow to give it its complete gold, thinking that it can now go away, but it actually blows up. And everyone's like laughing and cheering in the background. The Doctor's sad, and you see this sad expression. Because, you know, it's like John Pertwee, you know, it's like alien life, you know, was you know, not to say precious, but it was at least as important as human life. And the Doctor was sad that they didn't get away.
Right, which, well, he's shown before.
The whole
about
the laughing thing was the Doctor just not finding that funny because he found it sad.
Right, he was sad at the loss instead of just being overjoyed about the freedom that he had, you know, helped to win. Which is, like you said, it is a typical Doctor thing. You know, the whole being concerned about the conservation of life, because you know, quite honest, that's who he is a lot of the time. He's talked about it before. So,
and Robin's final words to the Doctor are absolutely awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the episode was a smile episode from start to finish for me. After Into the Dalek, and after the whole regeneration episode, which was a heavy episode, and then Into the Dalek to me was a letdown. I kind of, this episode was really a breath of fresh air. In conclusion,
I think it was a good placement. You know, it was definitely like, as far as, like you said, as
it was light.
Yeah, as the third episode, just the story was where it needed to be.
Yeah,
you know.
And I thought it had just enough. You know, talking about, you know, the need for heroes and the way it sort of, you know, paralleled Robin Hood. You know, as this ridiculous, you know, completely unbelievable hero. But, you know, in a way, that's the Doctor, too, you know. He's the same way. And and the people's need for those types of heroes sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah, because Clara obviously told Tom Riley, who plays Robin Hood in this the story of the Doctor, about, yeah, he reversed what the Doctor thought he was going to say about, you know, I was this person who stole a TARDIS.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, the rest is history.
The whole conversation at the end between Robin Hood and the Doctor, I thought was really nice.
And definitely worth rewatching. And then Tom Riley reacts to Marion being behind the TARDIS. Mm-hmm. And it is so genuine, his overjoyed look, that it's just like one of those freeze the frame kind of moments, because it's just so perfect.
Yeah.
If you see these videos on YouTube about soldiers coming home and their kids and their animals and everything else. Yeah, obviously the animal doesn't have that kind of face. But just the kids and wives and people, the reaction for the surprise that their parent is back or their husband is back or their wife, is he captured that genuine kind of response, which I thought was really beautiful.
Yep.
And so it started with a smile and it ended with one too, regardless of the ship being blown up, which was unfortunate. And there we go.